supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Bankruptcy this week. I'm Susan Phillips, WHYY News.
In sports, the Flyers head back to Buffalo for Game 6 tomorrow after losing to the Sabres last night in overtime 4-3. Phils, led by Cole Hamels, shut down the Padres Friday 2-0. This is WHYY.
Moss Acres supports You Bet Your Garden. Moss is a low-maintenance solution for shady spots where grass doesn't like to grow. Moss Acres offers information and a variety of mosses online at mossacres.com.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. We get a surprising number of emails asking us about the different philosophies of growing and gardening that are out there. Specifically, a lot of people ask about permaculture, biodynamic, and biointensive growing and want to know what the differences are and what these things really mean. So when we get to the question of the week, we'll do a brief discussion of these and a few other philosophies that all have organic gardening at the core of their souls. But mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're going to take that heap and help into your fascinating calls at 1-888-346-9499. Shannon, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Shannon. Where are you?
I am calling from Washington, New Jersey. We're right on the Musconetcon River.
Whoa, I'm glad you had to say that and not me. What can we do for Shannon in New Jersey?
We moved to our house 3 years ago. I used to live on a really nice open farm. I had beautiful organic gardens. And now we're on the slope leading down to the river. And we have a patch of land. It's about a 30-degree slope, about 30 feet by 150 feet. We've started clearing out all the thorns. It's New Jersey bramble. It's white rose and whatever else it is. It's unwalkable. So we've cleared out the thorns and the roots and everything. We cut it back every spring and then in the fall. And then we have found decades of waste. It's beer bottles and a truck bed and a sewing machine. So we've removed a good part of the soil, too, with clearing all that stuff out. What we would like to do, there's towering pines. There's tons of shade. We would like to plant something that is low cost that can start fighting and replacing the bramble that was there. We would like to establish something that's a little prettier and a little more kid-friendly to that area.
I love the combination of a truck bed, beer bottles, and a sewing machine. That's all you need in life, right?
Yep.
Now, is there water near here?
We are about 40 feet higher than the river, or 30 feet higher than the river. So, no, it is dry soil, and it's very nice and loose because of all the garbage we had to remove.
But this slope that you cleared, does it drain into the river?
It does drain down towards the river, correct.
So you've suffered some erosion since you pulled up all these plants that were in there.
Well, that's my concern. I'm concerned that we're going to slide down into the neighbor's house if we keep pulling up garbage.
Well, no, the garbage is not stabilizing it, but even though those were not the plants you wanted, they were probably doing a darn good job of
correct.
Holding the soil in place. That's the argument that Peter Del Tredici, the guy who wrote Wild Urban Plants of the Northeast, makes for so-called invasive plants, is mm-hmm. that most of the situations they're in, they're doing an incredibly good job of stabilizing the soil and protecting the stream beds and waterways. The problem is that they're on a list of plants that people aren't supposed to like, or as you point out about the multiflora rose, they're all thorny and brambly, and were probably planted to keep people off the property, quite honestly.
Right.
But you are in a delicate area here.
Mm-hmm.
And if there were no river there, and you simply wanted some color underneath these towering pines, I would suggest you put in moss, because that's typically what grows in that kind of damp, shady, and I presume it's acidic soil. But
right.
But you've removed a lot of, I presume it was wild grape and multiflora rose, which is exactly the same stuff I have in my woods, where I will tell you the only thing I have pulled is the poison ivy. Just mm-hmm. so that I can wander around. And then I cut trails with a brush cutter through the thorny vines so that they're still holding everything in place, but I can walk around. But clearly it's too late for that now.
Well, I think if we left it alone, everything would grow back. I'm not certain, but this stuff's always been pretty aggressive. I think it would.
My first response to you is to allow these plants to grow back and invest in a good brush cutter. Cut trails through it so that you and your family can walk through this area down to the water. But otherwise, these are the plants who probably still have a good amount of root system in the soil, and they will stabilize the soil. If you want to replace them with anything, I would contact the native plant societies in your area.
Okay.
But those are your choices. Either let it all grow back and keep it cut back and cut paths through it, which is actually a lot of fun. A lot of wildlife uses these invasives for shelter and food and everything like that. But I think it would be perfectly acceptable once you find the right native plants for that situation. And again, I'm thinking native berries, even not necessarily berries we eat, but berries that birds eat and wildlife eats. All right, but contact your local extension agent, get a list of native plants, find the native plant societies in your community. I'm sure they're there.
Yes, they are.
And they'll be happy to give you tons of suggestions. But I don't think you've done anything wrong.
All right, thank you so much for your help, Mike.
All right, good luck back there.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Galen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Galen. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for making it, sir. Where are you?
In the Abington area.
Okay, very good. I know exactly where you are. What can we do for Galen near Abington?
Well, I work with an autistic student, and we have a greenhouse, and we want to go in and we do a lot of watering. We've been planting corn and tomatoes and Brussels sprouts, and they started to sprout up, and I think they're getting a little big for their britches. I don't know what to do next.
Yeah, well, so you're complaining because your plants aren't dead yet.
Exactly.
Okay, so
I want them to stay alive because the student I work with, he loves them. He loves watering them, and maybe too much, but
yeah. Well, no, they'll tell you that when they're young, they die from overwatering very quickly if they get too much.
Okay, well, these haven't, so I guess I'm doing something right.
Lack of death is always a great sign in gardening. Now, is this a true greenhouse? In other words, it's a plastic or glass structure that's outdoors and gets light from all sides?
No, it's on the side of the building, so it gets a lot of morning light, so it gets really hot. All the mechanical windows and things like that, they don't work anymore. So
you don't have any way to vent the stuff?
No, there's no vent.
Can any of the windows be opened or anything like that?
I could do it manually.
You're going to have to.
Okay.
Now that we're getting into the warm season, you're going to have to open those windows during the day. And if the temperatures are going to stay in the 50s overnight, you don't have to close them again. But the danger now is cooking. That's why they've been able to take this much water, because they're getting cooked during the day when the full sun is on them.
The first
rule of greenhouses is you need an automatic vent or a fan that comes on. When did you start the seeds?
I planted them around March 15th.
Okay, that's just about the right time for tomatoes and other outside crops to get started, to get transplanted out. Now, what we're going to do with the regular crops, the tomatoes and other things like that, once we get into any time between May 7th and May 15th, watch the weather. And as soon as it's not going to get really cold at night anymore, as long as it's going to stay in at least the upper 40s, then you can take the plants outside where they're going to be planted. And if it's not going to get cold, take them out and bring them back in the first couple of times. But over the course of a week, I want you to take them out during the day, bring them back in at night a couple of times. And then, after the third or fourth time, leave them out in their pots to get acclimated to being outdoors. That'll harden them off. We can plant them around May 15th, but I'm very worried about the corn. Corn is generally direct sowed in the ground where it's going to grow. It's never traditionally started and then transplanted. With the corn plant, the only thing I don't want you to do is transplant it.
Okay.
You can either grow it in the pot above ground or plant the pot in the ground. And then when the corn plant forms tassels at the top, you will have to rub those tassels with your hands. You'll have to get the pollen down from the tassels into the silks that are emerging on the corn plant. And you can do that. You can pollinate it by hand.
Wow.
And you might get some little ears of corn off that. But this is going to be a heck of a lot of fun.
I can imagine.
But that's the deal. You can start moving them out around May 7th. You can start planning to plant them around May 15th. Make sure you vent them, especially now. It's getting critical. I'm so happy they're still alive. Make sure some venting, especially as close as you can get to the top of that structure. But the heat is your enemy now. And next year, you got to get a vent for that thing.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate all the good advice.
All right. Well, we love the work that you're doing. It's very important work. Thank you for doing it. And I hope you and your kids have a lot of fun with those plants this summer.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn our listeners in and around the area of Johnstown, PA, that it will be my honor to deliver the keynote address and present a workshop at the first ever Allegheny Mountain Green Festival on Saturday, May 14th at the University of Pittsburgh's Living Learning Center in Johnstown. But don't you go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and a talk about what permaculture, biodynamic, and biointensive gardening really mean. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible with support from Seed Savers Exchange, whose 2011 Heirloom Seed Catalog, offering nearly 600 varieties, is now available. Learn more at seedsavers.org.
You're listening to WHYY.
Medford Lees proudly supports WHYY, a Quaker-related, not-for-profit community celebrating 40 years of service. Medford Lees offers two campuses in Medford and Lumberton, New Jersey, featuring arboretum settings, residential home designs ranging from townhouses to garden-style apartments, varied contract options, a self-governing residence association, and comprehensive on-site wellness and health services. Further details at 800-331-4302 or MedfordLees.org.
Benjamin Lovell Shoes is a proud sponsor of WHYY, celebrating 20 years of style and comfort with locations throughout Philadelphia, Haddonfield, and Chads Ford. Information at blshoes.com. Benjamin Lovell Shoes, style never felt so good.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, presenting the new Lincoln MKZ Hybrid, a luxury hybrid that gets an EPA-estimated 41 miles per gallon in the city. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, it's not just luxury, it's smarter than that.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we've all heard the terms permaculture, biodynamic farming and gardening, the biointensive system of growing thrown around. What do these things really mean? What do they stand for? Where did they come from? We will examine those three growing philosophies and take you back to the system that inspired and predates them all when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Irma, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing very well today, Irma. How are you?
I'm very excited. I moved to Philadelphia after living in New York City for 40 years, so I'm thrilled that I have a backyard garden, and I want to get started. I have a 500-square-foot space.
Okay.
Of which I have a big deck, a wooden deck, so for potted plants, and then I have some dirt surrounding the deck. So I don't know how to begin.
Where are you in Philly?
In southwest Philly, by Christian Street.
Okay. You're in Southwest Philly, which is a gardening mecca. You're, you know, within a couple miles of Bartram's Gardens and stuff like that. So you want containers on a deck.
Right.
And then you have bare earth surrounding the deck.
I do.
And does the bare earth get sun, shade? What's going on out there?
Because, Mike, I'm told I face south. The sun comes up and bakes on my back patio at this hour, this time of the year, around 1 o'clock.
Okay, so it doesn't get to the area until 1?
That's right.
And that's the area where we're talking in the ground?
That's right, at this time of the year.
Man, that's pretty worthless.
No.
Well, I mean, for growing anything that you'd really be interested in, plants, food plants, and disease-prone ornamental plants like roses and lilacs, they all need morning sun to dry off their leaves. What I would do is I would spend my time this spring and summer having a lot of fun in containers on my deck. What do you want to grow? Do you want color or do you want food?
Okay, I want food. Who lived here before that was a gardener. She grew tomatoes and herbs.
Yeah, but did you ask her where?
On the deck.
On the deck.
Yeah.
Well,
you left some of those pots, yeah.
Okay, good. Get new soil-free mix. Go to our website. Go to youbetyourgarden.org and click on Garden Answers A to Z and read the articles on container gardening. That'll help you out a lot. I would go nuts on the herbs. I would go nuts on salad greens in the spring and the fall. I would do mixes of flowers out there. You are welcome to plant fruiting crops. Tomatoes are going to do the worst if the sun situation does not change. Peppers, cucumbers, plants like that, they're going to be more forgiving of the lack of morning sun as long as they get good hours of sun.
Have a kale and collard.
They're fine. They're fine. They don't. It's the fruiting crops, first of all, that need the most sun. So greens, roots, and shoots always do best with limited sun. You know, you can grow potatoes in containers out there.
Okay.
You could certainly grow kale and collards, and as I said, all of the salad greens. You can grow pansies out there and pluck the flowers for your salads.
Yeah.
All fall, spring, and winter. Experiment with tomatoes. Make sure you use big containers, but small tomatoes. Tomatoes that have the word bush or patio in their name.
I'm not so interested in tomatoes. I was really interested in the greens.
Oh, the greens are going to do great out there. They have much less sun requirement than fruiting crops. So time's a wasting, girl. You should have lettuce and spinach going out there now. And then as the summer progresses, you'll switch to collards, which are more of a hot weather green. And there's other hot weather greens as well. And then as soon as the weather starts to cool down, you'll go back to lettuces and spinaches and, again, kales. And they'll grow for you. You can use those containers almost 12 months of the year in your situation. But down in the yard, there's a lot of things that you can plant. Spring bulbs this fall, you can make that backyard a ridiculous showcase of color in the spring with spring bulbs. Just chart the sun. Spend the time this summer on the deck and watch the sun on that backyard. And at the end of the season, you'll know exactly what you got and what you can do with it. And fall is the perfect time to plant almost everything.
That's great, Mike. Thanks so much for your help. I really appreciate the enthusiasm that you have.
Oh, I appreciate people listening. And I know the joy of moving into a new place and having itchy fingers. So just scratch them all summer long on the deck. And make your plans for the backyard. You'll be very happy with the results doing it that way.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, good luck.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Gary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, good morning, Mike. I appreciate you taking my call.
Well, hello to you, Gary. Where are you, man?
Mike, I'm down Glasgow, Delaware, about 12 miles south of Newark, just before you go over the Chesapeake-Delaware Canal.
Okay, we know where you are now.
I have what I've always called, Mike, an upright U. And the center portions of this has reached 16 foot tall or more. The snowstorms of 09 and 010 have really beat this thing up. And I would really like to cut it off at about 5 to 6 foot. I'm wondering if this is a good time, and I'm sure you'll straighten me out on that and maybe even some more information about it.
Yeah, there are two upright kind of yews. You know, there's the kind that can be shaped like shrubs, and then there's two that are, you know, pyramidical tree-type plants.
Sir.
And they're both true yews. They're both in the taxis family, and even though we're not supposed to have new taxis. And, you know, the Japanese one gets about 40, 50 feet tall. The English one gets 30 to 60 feet tall. But they are both shaped like almost any of the evergreens that we think of in terms of having a Christmas tree shape, kind of a cross between that and an arborvitae.
Sure, sure.
You say you have some more shrub-like yews.
I have a couple low shrub that, you know, they're not, I'm 6 foot tall and they're just barely at my waist level that spread out right good, and I keep them cut back. But I've got these other two that are I call them tree. I mean, you know, they got some pretty good sized leaders coming off the stump going upwards, and they've gotten so high and that snow gotten in them and ice, and it just bent them over. I try to get out there, Mike, and clean that snow and ice off, but I just don't always get it or do a good job. And
I leave it alone. I had a gold dust plant that was totally horizontal, that was totally flat to the ground. I went out once. I couldn't stand it. It was covered with ice, and I started chipping away at the ice, and I broke off a big chunk of the plant.
Wow.
So I thought, this is what happens when you garden in the winter. And I went back inside, and I left it alone. When the ice and snow melted, it was still laying on the ground. Well, as of yesterday, it is straight up again.
Okay.
You know, that power of the sun pulling these plants is extraordinary. Now, mine is a little thinner stemmed. It's going to respond more quickly. Tell me that you haven't seen them straightening themselves out.
Some of the center stuff has straightened itself out real good because it didn't go down to the ground, but it opened up right good bit with the snow and ice. And the center, which is absolutely the tallest, has really straightened up. But there's these outside leaders all the way around that just aren't straightening up. They're still just bent over, and it just really looks like crap.
Well, I understand. So here's what you're going to do. Obviously, you can see that this plant is righting itself the way I expect all these winter-damaged plants that didn't snap will. But this is a great time of year to prune yews and similar plants. You know, they can take a good pruning.
Okay.
So why don't we go around and take off some of just the outside of these branches?
Okay.
And then see how the rest of the branch responds, because it's going to stimulate new growth. New growth is going to come out. That new growth is going to be much more responsive to gravity and the sun. And, you know, you can do light prunings of a yew. You can do that every 2 weeks all throughout the spring. So why don't you just gently try to shape the plants that were damaged and trust in the attraction of the sun, especially of the new growth you're going to stimulate. And as you make your prunings, see what you're liking, what you don't like, and moderate it a little bit every time you go back in there. Don't take off too much at once, because you can always go back out again in a week or two.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
And then let's see how it looks at the beginning of the summer. I think you're going to be very happy with the way these plants look.
Okay.
All right, man?
Yeah, man, that sounds very good.
All right. Well, good luck to Gary and his ewes.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Take care, sir.
All right, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there, Mike.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm good.
And where is John good?
West Windsor, New Jersey.
Where's that?
Near Princeton.
Oh, okay. Very good. What can we do for John near Princeton?
Trying to figure out a way to grow grass in a, I think, with every challenge that you can muster. I have two small children, two twin girls, they're 4 and a half, and a wonderful dog. And the backyard is pretty much theirs. And we've tried to, you know, seeding in the fall, seeding in spring. My wife is pretty strict about what kind of lawn care we're going to use, so we haven't used anything with chemicals for at least the last 3 years. And boy, the grass really shows it. I know last year was a challenge, or I've heard that from people that know what they're talking about because of how dry it was, but my front and back lawn just looked terrible. And I don't know what we can do.
Well, I have to correct you. The difference between a great-looking lawn and a lousy-looking lawn is 90% cultural. It has very little to do with chemicals or organics. I mean, lawn chemicals are heavily promoted. We are led from the time we are children to think that we got to pour these high explosives on the lawn 4 times a year and do all these other things. And really, it is the basics of understanding the grass and its life cycle and how we care for it outside of feedings that really tells the tale. Now, are these areas in sun or shade?
The front has definitely more sun. The back is probably half sun. We've got a lot of mature trees, too, in the backyard. I think there are 10 trees. So there are parts of the backyard that are clearly mostly shade. But I would say that's probably only a third of the backyard.
Yes, but the roots of the trees are underneath the entire lawn, sucking all the nutrients and moisture.
Absolutely, yeah.
See, people understand the shade, but they don't understand the biggest threat from trees is root competition.
I gotcha, yeah.
Now, out front is full sun?
It's full sun, and there's no mature trees. Actually, there are two probably at the perimeter where it meets the sidewalk. But it's full sun most of the day.
And what did you try to sow there?
One of my neighbors, and this is, you know, of course, I live across the street from Mr. Green Thumb, and I think he does this mostly naturally, but he was recommending, it was a tall fescue blend.
Okay, on your front lawn, you have two choices. Will you tolerate zoysia grass, which turns brown and goes dormant over winter and greens up every summer, or do you demand a grass that is mostly green the year round?
Oh, no. That sounds fine. If it's hardy and it doesn't require a lot of TLC, because that's the other part. We don't have irrigation.
It requires nothing.
Oh, then it's perfect for me.
What you do, I mean, you've seen these ads in the back of the magazine, right? The Miracle Zoysia grass, you know, developed by the U.S. government. Go online. There's Zoysia farms that sell the starts all over the country. Zoysia grass is the only grass you can start now.
Okay.
And what you would do is you would buy X number of plugs. You would tear up what you have out front. I would strongly recommend you have a big load of yard waste compost delivered. Mix that into your lousy clay soil out front, and then level it. Make sure the ground is level. Then you could install the Zoysia plugs. I would urge you, with your situation and your track record, to buy twice as many plugs as recommended, and the grass will fill in completely this summer. And again, you have to remember not to panic. When it starts to turn tan and dormant, that's how it conserves its energy over winter, because it's a warm season grass, and it will do fine. It grows very slowly. It can be cut at 1.5 to 2 inches. It does not need to be fed, but you will need to irrigate it this first season while it's getting established.
That's fine. And we would do that anytime that we did plant. We were pretty diligent about making sure that it was well watered, but this sounds like a good solution for the front.
And that is a lawn that the kids and dog can play on without tearing up. Now, I got bad news for you out back. Grass is not a natural ground cover under trees. Grass can only tolerate the foot traffic of children and dogs if it's a full sun grass.
Okay.
Because full sun grasses can spread laterally to fill in their own bare spots. You might be able to get away with a fine fescue, and you would sow the seed in the fall, doing the same things I said, tearing up what you have, leveling the surface after a big load of compost has been delivered. And then you just sow the seed like Johnny freaking Appleseed. You just spread the seed around. You can do it by hand and then go over the lawn with a rake till you don't see any seed anymore. Water twice a day until it's up. And that is a lawn that will do fine. The back, it's a hard challenge. There are no easy answers for back there. Probably what I would do and what I did with my own kids and dog is just let whatever nature plants there grow there, cut it at 3 inches high. And if it's two kids and a dog, who cares?
Yeah, and that's pretty much what we've done. We're amazed at what nature can grow there. You know, it's crazy looking clover and weeds and all kinds of stuff. But
it's stuff that thrives back there. It's stuff that resists the foot traffic. You didn't spend any money on it, and you can still cut it at 3 inches, and they'll have a safe green area to play on that probably looks like a lawn from 100 feet away.
When you're squinting, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, man?
Thank you very much.
All right, good luck, John.
All right, bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and explain that when we say that you can call our toll-free number, 1-888-346-9499, to ask a gardening question anytime, we mean anytime. Lots of folks have been coming up to me at personal appearances and saying, I want to call in, but I hear these callers from all over different time zones, and I don't know when I should call. The answer is anytime you want to. Just get your question ready. Give us a ring at 1-888-346-9499, and we'll take care of the rest. But don't you go reaching for your rotary phone just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the differences between biodynamic, biointensive, and permaculture. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible with support from Seed Savers Exchange, whose 2011 Heirloom Seed Catalog, offering nearly 600 varieties, is now available. Learn more at seedsavers.org.
You're listening to WHYY.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. This coming Tuesday evening, April 26th, I'll deliver a free talk for the Friends of the Wissahickon at the Valley Green Inn. My talk and a wine and cheese reception are free, but you must register in advance. On Thursday, May 5th, I'll appear at the West Lawn Library near Reading, PA from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And on Saturday, May 7th, I'll deliver free talks at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. at the Green Fair at the Care and Share Shops in Souderton, PA. And the Pinelands Preservation Alliance will hold an Earth Day native plant sale next Saturday, April 30th, from 10 to 3 at the Bishop Farmstead in Southampton Township, New Jersey. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
Supporting WHYY 10,000 Villages, featuring fairly traded handcrafted jewelry, scarves, home decor, and gifts for Mother's Day. 10,000 Villages, with 10 fair trade retail stores in the greater Philadelphia area. 10,000villages.com.
Cloudy and 56 degrees in Center City. It's 11:39.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week, comparing the different techniques used in permaculture, biodynamic gardening and farming, and the biointensive method of growing. We get a lot of questions about these kind of techniques, and we'll try to sort things out after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Michael, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you, Michael. How are you?
Great. How you doing?
I am doing very well, sir. Where are you?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
All right. Well, then we have to ask you what neighborhood?
The Art Museum area.
Okay.
So we're at, we can see the Art Museum from our house.
All right. What can we do for a Michael who can view the Art Museum from his roof?
My wife and I have a townhouse with your standard 17 by 15 sort of city patio garden.
Right.
It's all gravel and concrete except for this beautiful Japanese maple. It's not a big patio. We'd like to fix it up and have more sitting area, more entertainment space. And this Japanese maple tree, as beautiful as it is, it grows out a lot. It, you know, harbors birds, and it's really not necessary for the aesthetic, just given, you know, what little space we have. And we love it, and we don't want to see it die, but we were thinking of having one of the nurseries come over and, like, donate it to them and see if, you know, how possible it was to have them uproot it and then maybe plant it somewhere else, you know, in a park or something like that for other people to enjoy.
Well, you won't have any trouble getting somebody to come out and remove it.
Right.
The only way it's going to be replanted right away is if you have someone who wants it, and then they pay the same guys just to carry it over their house and put it into the ground.
Gotcha.
So how tall is this tree? Have you told me this?
No, it's probably about 4.5 feet high.
Okay, so it's not big.
No, but it grows out. That's the issue. It, you know, really grows wide and round, and it sort of feels like it envelops the patio a lot.
You do realize you can prune back the new growth every winter or spring by as much as a third and not harm the plant.
I didn't know we could do that much. I did have a friend who is a professional in that area in landscape architecture, and she did prune maybe an eighth of it, and she kind of guided me on it. I'm still nervous about doing it, but I didn't realize you could take that much back.
That's the limit.
Okay.
One-third or 30% it's what's always tossed about as the maximum you can remove in any given year. So let's be conservative. Let's drop back, and let's say you're being a good reporter, and she took off one-eighth. You could easily do double that every spring, spring after spring, and train this into a more agreeable shape. You know, the best time to prune this is in the dead of winter, but any time between the dead of winter and when it's leafing out is ideal. And the reason I specify this is, again, now you can be a little bit aggressive, but because the tree is so healthy as it enters spring and wakes up, it can really recover from that pruning best at that time of year. Now, dormant pruning, it's just like carrying a kid in who's 3 years old from the van. You can bang their head against a couple of doorways. They don't wake up. So you can prune this thing in the dead of winter, and it won't even know it was pruned. Then when it leafs out in the spring, it's just smaller.
Sure.
You have a lot of wiggle room here, and it sounds like you have a remarkably healthy tree for the spot. I would try to split the difference. I would try to get the tree, you know, one-third smaller and live with it that way and enjoy it for what it is. And let's even say you get nuts and you prune too much and the tree starts to decline. Well, then you get it removed just like you were going to.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But for now, I think we can smallicize this tree year after year and you can all get along.
That sounds great. I appreciate it.
All right, Michael. Good luck.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
You too. 1-888-346-9499. Bruce, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good. Bruce, how are you?
Very well.
And where is Bruce well?
Long Island, Port Jefferson, New York.
Very good. What can we do for you?
I have plants running around the top on beds on my deck, and maybe the average, you know, width of the beds are maybe 2 feet, about 8 or 9 inches of soil in the beds, but it runs for about 150 feet all around the deck on the various levels. And I had first put soaker hoses in there, and that was not very satisfactory, A, and B, I've got some organic beds, and they talk about there being lead in there and not advised, you know, don't drink the water kind of a thing.
There's lead in rainfall.
Okay.
One thing you have to realize, when we talk about organic gardening, we're not talking about a clean room where you're making silicon chips. We're talking about you not using herbicides, insecticides, or chemical fertilizers. You do that and you're organic. Yes, there's going to be people who are going to say you shouldn't use rubber hoses, you shouldn't use plastic containers. I will side with them and say you should never use PVC around things that you're going to eat. But I am a big fan of soaker hoses as a watering system. I'm wondering why you weren't satisfied with the results. They're typically the perfect slow-release watering system. Very effective use of water, really gets down to the root zone of plants, never gets sprayed into the air, doesn't make a mess. All the other girls like it. It makes all its own clothes. I mean, what went wrong?
It didn't seem to water very evenly. And although it was brand new, because I had replaced some older beds that I had used this material in, it just didn't seem to water very well. And I had other problems with just the connections and things like that.
Now, when you put your soaker hoses, which are just black plastic hoses that sweat water slowly, how long are you running them, and do you have them covered with any kind of a mulch to keep the moisture in the soil and to hide the hoses?
In the past, I've had mulch. Last year, I did not have mulch because I redid some of these beds.
What I'm saying is when you have sweat hoses and you lay them on the surface of the soil, whether it's in a raised bed or in containers that go on for long lengths, and you have adequate water pressure, you know, because you're talking 150 feet, which may be 50 feet too much for one line to keep the pressure up at the other end, and you cover them with mulch, they are considered to be the most exceptional watering system. Now, were you turning this on and off by hand, or were you using a timer?
Timer.
Yeah, and how long were you watering?
About an hour.
And how often?
Every day.
That would seem to be unnecessary.
Again, part of the problem was that there were areas where the watering was inadequate, and I had them buried, you know, maybe an inch beneath the soil.
Oh, no, you're not supposed to do that. You lay them on the surface and then cover with something to hide them and to retain the moisture. I would dig them up right away, I would lay them out on the ground, and I would test them. I would try to use small sections so the pressure would be high, and I would try to flush them out, make sure that all the hoses were working, and then I would replace them on the top and cover them with mulch. I think you may have to break it up into two sections because of the length or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not getting the good watering at the end, that's a slam dunk answer. So dig them up, make sure you flush them out, make sure they're unclogged, and then maybe split it up into two sections so that they're getting good pressure. And then I don't think you want to run it for more than an hour every other day or every third day. If anything, if it's so slow, I would rather you run it for 2 hours every 3 days than every day, because you're weakening your plants by running it every day.
Okay. All right.
All right, man?
Well, thank you, sir.
All right. Good luck, Bruce. I think you're almost there.
Okay. Thanks a bunch.
All right. Take care. All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. What do permaculture, biodynamic, and biointensive mean? Our thoughtful question this week comes from Joe in Greenville, North Carolina, who writes, I've been looking into the different design systems I could use in establishing a new organic garden and food forest fruit orchard. I've heard about permaculture, biodynamic, and biointensive, but I'm really confused. What's the difference between these three? And finally, which do you think would give me the best view on how to design my new garden in a functional way for the long term? Well, Joe, at least two of the three you name, biodynamic and biointensive, sprang from the same source as the stripped-down style I espouse every week on this show, plain old organic gardening. No, OG doesn't have as catchy a name as the philosophies you've cited, but it is the British-American counterpart to the German biodynamic method. It evolved from the same influences as the biointensive system, and it predates permaculture by at least a couple of decades. What J.I. Rodale called the British system of organic gardening came into its own at about the same time the German philosopher and mystic Rudolf Steiner was popularizing his theory of biodynamicism. Both were rebellions against the accepted, highly toxic and destructive agricultural practices of the day. But while the Brits and Steiner were both inspired by rural forms of agriculture from around the world, all of which emphasized the use of every available form of organic matter, Steiner also veered deeply into symbolism, astrology, and astronomy. True biodynamics will bury animal parts, cattle horns, deer stomachs, stuffed with objects like crystals or manure, at precise times of the year in precise locations to later be dug up and made into homeopathic soil and compost preparations, following the exact formulas created by Steiner back in the 20s. Biodynamic agriculture is timed to the alignment of the planets and phases of the moon, and is accompanied by rituals like sitting naked on planting beds at precise times of night. Biodynamic tools contain copper plugs to help channel planetary energy into the soil and crops. And like all of the philosophies named by our listener, biodynamic agriculture is strictly organic, using no man-made chemicals and emphasizing the creation of naturally fertile soil. Now, how important are the rituals and other mystical aspects to being biodynamic? I suspect that depends greatly on the individual. I can say from my perspective, and that of the late Robert Rodale, that there is zero wrong with the biodynamic method. In fact, Bob once remarked that the biodynamics are as organic as we are, and arguably more fun. Now, the biointensive method most emphasizes my style of organic growing. Build up the soil, keep it light and loose, and design systems that allow you to grow a lot of food in a small area. It's a version of, and very true to the components of, the French intensive style, a system that predates all the other name philosophies and that gave us the original concept of raised beds. Steiner incorporated elements of this French method in his biodynamic system, and then his student, Alan Chadwick, refined those elements, minus Steiner's mysticism, into a system he called biointensive. Chadwick introduced this new old concept to the United States, where the method was popularized by the great John Jevons and his group Ecology Action. Jevons' classic book, How to Grow More Vegetables and Fruits, Nuts, Berries, Grains, and Other Crops Than You Ever Thought Possible on Less Land Than You Can Imagine, remains an incredibly useful treatise on intensive growing. Every serious organic gardener should read it. That brings us to permaculture, a philosophy based on the fashioning of systems, agricultural and social, that are naturally sustainable and that utilize a local area's resources to their utmost. Think of this as permanent culture, both in the concept of agriculture and human culture. Although it also lacks the mystical elements, permaculture does owe much of its core philosophy of thinking in large-scale cultural terms to Rudolf Steiner, who also helped found the Waldorf schools and Camp Hill communities, where residential living and agriculture are fully intertwined. Three systems of growing food without toxic chemicals and in ways that imitate and respect nature would seem to me to be much more alike than dissimilar, especially when you look back to their common influences and the cross-pollinations between them. Add my style, the Rodale method of organic growing, and Mel Bartholomew's intensive system of square-foot gardening, and we've got five philosophies that mesh like the fingers of a hand. Now, if you're tight on space or just want to grow a lot of good eating in a compact area, the biointensive, Rodale, square foot, and original French intensive method should all work well for you. If you're leaning more towards building a long-term sustainable community of plants like the food forest our listener mentions, take a long look at permaculture. And if your instincts lead you towards building that community, or just plain gardening, in a way that incorporates symbolism, astronomy, and planetary energy, biodynamic might be what your spirit is craving. Back when I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine, we plucked thoughts and ideas from all of these philosophies. And we found that rather than clash against each other, they tended to naturally aggregate into common themes and goals. Read up on all of them. Take from each what you can use, and don't be afraid to create your own system. Well, that sure was some interesting information and opinion about the different disciplines that practice organic agriculture, now wasn't it? Luckily, yous can read the print version of this and every question of the week at the Gardens Alive website, where this week you'll also find links to lots more info and background material about the philosophies we just discussed. To access all this wonderful data, just click the Question of the Week link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to permaculture me if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore, at garden@whyy.org. Please, please, please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject of your email in the subject line, not the words question or help. And please check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our alphabetized archive of garden answers. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Kevin Love Train Griffin. Our woebegone webmasters are Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our biodynamic intern is Jessica Mandick. The permanently cultured Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Intensive Al Banks is our editor. I'm the sole proponent of the Irish intensive system of gardening, whose rituals include the legendary Guinness system of raised bed building, Mike McGrath. And I'll biointensively see you next week. Although many people focus on kitchen waste, you can't make good compost without a lot of dry brown materials in the mix. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I'll explain how to make compost without fall leaves, plus your fabulous phone calls.
Blooms, brambles, basil, and beans. Mike brings it all, including the latest inorganic methods of battling bugs, Saturday mornings at 11 on You Bet Your Garden, here on WHYY.